Okay, hi everybody. This is Bill Neville with the Interest Group. And we're going to go ahead and get started today. I want to welcome Charles and Josh from Atom Beam Technologies. And we're going to be talking to bit today about artificial intelligence and a little bit about how you can invest in it using your retirement account, using your self-directed IRA. Go ahead, Charles. Before I get into this, as we always do, if you're regular attendees, we put up this page that basically says that Entrust, what we are, is a custodian and record keeper of what are called self-directed retirement accounts. So we do not sell investments, we don't advise, we don't promote or endorse or recommend any particular type of investment. So if you're thinking about investing in artificial intelligence, private equity, or any of the other types of things that non-traditional assets you can hold inside a self-directed IRA, please talk to advisors, talk to lawyers, make sure that you have people who are reviewing any of the documents for you, because that's not something that Entrust will do. We're just a custodian record keeper. So here's what we're going to go over. Adam Beam's going to talk about generative artificial intelligence and how it works, the benefits and risks of the investing strategy associated with it, how you can incorporate market trends into your strategy, and doing your due diligence. And then finally, you can also talk about how you can invest in AI with and without an IRA, which really is largely the same thing. This is me. I'm hosting. I'm with the Entrust Group. I'm business development manager. I've been go ahead and go on with these, Charles. I've been with Entrust actually a little over 14 years at this point. And my role is to educate people how you can use your retirement account to invest in alternative assets. Go ahead, Charles, on the next one. So what we are, Entrust, we are, it says self-directed IRA administrators. What we are is we are a custodian and record keeper of your retirement account. So anytime you have a retirement account, an IRA or 401k or whatever type of account, it requires that account be held by a financial services company who acts as custodian. Most people's custodian is a bank or a brokerage firm, and those banks and brokerage firms typically limit their investors to only investing in publicly traded stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. But the IRS says you can invest in pretty much anything you want. You can invest in real estate. You can invest in private equity. You can invest in private debt. You can invest in precious metals. I could go on and on. You can invest in almost anything you want, but you have to have your account with a custodian who is willing to process and hold whatever investment is that you want to make. So that's where the Entrust Group comes in. So we will act as custodian and record keeper for your retirement account, in which you can invest in non-traditional assets. Go ahead, Charles. So the majority of our company has a certified IRA. We are certified IRA service professionals. And we hold these monthly educational webinars. So this is part of a series that we do. And then we also have an IRA Academy where we train other people in our industry how to pass the test to get their CIFP certification. We're the only company in the space that has that certification. Go ahead, Charles. We Entrust, we currently have over $5 billion in assets. We've been in business since 1981, so we've been in business for over 40 years. We've had over 45,000 different investors who have had accounts with us and invested. Again, since 1981, we've been in business. And you get a single point of contact. So with a lot of the companies in our space, if you open an account and you have questions or need assistance, you're going to call an 800 number. But with Entrust, you get provided a business development manager. I'm one of four and their associate. So you get a team of two people as your single point of contact. So at this point, I'm going to pass it on to Charles and Josh, and then I'll come back in at the very end. We will have a Q&A at the very end. So the Q&A button at the very bottom, if you have any questions, Feel free to type them in, and we're going to cover those at the end. We will answer every question. So if you have any for the Atom Beat team about artificial intelligence, you can ask that. If you have anything about self-directed IRAs, you can ask me, and we'll cover them all at the end. All right, I'll catch you at the end. Go ahead, Charles.
Great. Thanks, Bill. Really quickly on who we are. We're a, not surprisingly, an AI company that has some, that's software centric, that's has some very interesting technologies. We'll talk a little about one of them in here, but and I'll in a moment introduce who you're hearing from here, Josh and I. But first, let me walk you through who, what the agenda is, so that we can talk about, you know, we're going to talk about. So the idea really is we're focusing here on a subset of AI called generative AI. And that includes the things like ChatGPT and Bard and the other ones you've heard of, Claude, those big large language models. And we're going to be explaining what the what that is, how they work. Not in any great technical details, so don't get freaked out. You know, it's going to be Josh is a professor and he knows how to deal with people who are not already, you know, experts in the field. So anyway, so you know, he's good at making it very reasonable. So all right, so and then we're going to talk some about how you invest in it. There's different approaches, you know. Some are just really obvious things, and some are not so obvious. So we're going to deal with that, and also, you know, how risky it is, and what the end game could look like, and so forth. And it's one of the most significant, we think, events, you know, innovations that has ever occurred in the history of mankind. And it's that kind of level of impact, as I think we'll give you some sense of. Obviously, we're not going to, you know, go into again the super technical stuff. And we're going to talk about like how that could work in your strategy, your market, your investing strategy, what opportunities, how to think about those, and what diligence you want to do, and generally just, you know, how you would invest in it, either through an IRA or not. And then Bill will take it back over and walk you through the particulars of investing through your IRA. So the what we're going to do here is I'm going to do a quick intro of myself, hand it off to Josh. He'll introduce himself, and then Josh is going to take us through some of the, you know, the technology aspects and scientific aspects of what this is and how it works in general. And then I'm going to talk some about the investing side. So first, who am I? I'm the CEO of Atom Beam. I've been CEO of a couple other companies prior to this. And I was I'm actually here in San Diego for a Navy conference, and you know, hanging out with my erstwhile guys. We have actually a two-star admiral who's retired and on our board, so we do a fair bit with DoD. And then, so that's me, and I'm going to talk about more of the business stuff, and but I'll hand it over to Josh, and Josh will pick it up and do his thing, please.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for joining us. Josh Cooper. I'm Chief Scientific Officer of Atom Beam. And yeah, as the slide says, I'm a mathematician and a computer scientist. I really bridge those worlds. I'm a mathematics professor at University of South Carolina. Go Gamecocks. And yeah, my background is in
Yeah, like you'd ever go to a football game.
it's oh, it's true, it's true. And yeah, my background is in algorithms and combinatorial complexity and machine learning and a number of related topics.
And what he doesn't say here is he's the guy who took a really cool idea and turned it into something real, and came up with an incredible array of things that our technologies can do that really can change how everything with a processor operates. And, you know, and kudos to Josh. he was the engine that made it happen. So there it, moving
Thanks.
right along. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, so just a quick history of sort of recent developments. Of course, computer science is something that goes back to the 40s, but maybe even earlier. But right, so in the 90s, we're seeing, these what you might call data processing activities that computers are enabling, whether it's word processing or, accounting, et cetera. And then by the 90s, especially late 90s, the advent of the internet and suddenly internet commerce is possible, and email and all the things that we're used to. More recently, maybe somewhere around 15 years ago, there's a real explosion in the use of mobile technologies and some of the applications that that enables, like Uber, for example, but also all the social media that we interact with all day, and all kinds of business tools, and all the enormous amount of apps and software tools that we have access to. And then something happened, right? So there's something that's really been cooking for a while. AI dates back to the 50s, really, but didn't really come into its own until about 10 years ago. And there's really been an explosion in the last 2 years, with LLMs in particular, right? Large language models. So I'll talk a little bit about what has made this possible, but there's a number of developments made it so that, now computers are able to assist and participate fully in what you might call knowledge activities, right? So truly interactive systems that are enabling people to do more, and to sort of discard some of the more routine aspects of work in order to be able to do the creative and technical end of things more proficiently. Next slide. Yeah. So, all right. So we're going to talk mostly about generative AI today. You may have heard that term. This is a whole category of AI. AI, of course, stands for artificial intelligence. Often, computer scientists, mathematicians, we call it machine learning. But the idea behind generative AI is that you train it on a bunch of representative data. So you give it a ton of text or images or music, audio, et cetera. And then it extracts patterns. We'll talk more about the details in a bit, but it models it in such a way that you can then ask it to give you new examples that resemble that kind of data that you started with, that you trained on. Of course, the hard part is that, as far as the computer is concerned, all of these data types are just zeros and ones. They don't mean anything. It's only to our human eyes that they really mean something. So there's been a number of developments we'll talk about in a bit that have made it possible for computers to get at the semantic content that humans recognize so that we're able to do things like this generative AI, where new examples of content based on large pools of training data can be generated on the fly and in a customized way. So yeah, there's this explosion, this big bang moment that happened in 2022 that we've all heard about, right? Just for a matter of comparison, looking at some important recent technologies, everything from Netflix to Airbnb and Facebook. If you ask, how long did it take for these various services and products to accrue 1 million users? Well, Netflix maybe 3.5 years, and et cetera. You can read the chart. ChatGPT took about 5 days from its launch to the point where 1 million people were using it. Right? It's just absolutely head spinning, the pace of things. And I mean, that's a general theme with all of these technologies, that it's really accelerating the pace of advancements. So just to give a little sort of taxonomy of how AI is used. Of course, this is not comprehensive. There's lots of different ways that have yet to be invented, of the ways that AI is going to be used, and others that exist today and are just not really, they're hard to classify. But broadly, reasonable to sort of split things into two categories. You might call it discriminative uses and generative uses. Discriminative uses are optimization problems, solving optimization problems, or solving prediction problems, right? So this is algorithmic trading, for example. You want to predict what tomorrow's price is and then make some intelligent decisions that optimize your expected profit. Or dynamic pricing engines, right, that are trying to take in live information about what users are doing and where the interest lies in order to assign pricing in an optimized way. Or demand forecasting, right, which is very, very similar. All kinds of forecasting falls into this category. In fact, weather forecasting is well within the realm of discriminative AI and is of course, an important topic these days. All of the best hurricane models are now AI. They're not just trying to predict the physics anymore. Or ad speed, right? So all different aspects of ads. So where to serve them, how to serve them, to whom to serve them. These are things that AIs can make the decisions on the fly, and then help the user to get more bang for the buck out of their advertising dollars. So that contrasts somewhat with a generative AI, right? So generative AI is, remember, producing examples, new examples of content based on a corpus that was provided to it previously. So some examples are, there's a tremendous number of writing applications, whether it's generating marketing copy or a first draft of an essay, or writing articles, or there's a lot of first draft applications that come up in this context, and closely related chatbots, right? So these are deployed in all kinds of contexts, and right, the idea is that it's generating content. It's actually what these chatbots are doing is they're trying to predict what would a human say next. Like literally, what's the next word a human would say? Does that 100 times, and now you've got a couple of sentences. And it's based on, you know, all the training data that you provided. So chatbots are a good example of that. This inverse design business, it's really a hot thing in material science these days. Actually, as a mathematician, I'm seeing it used in an interesting way. The idea is that instead of, you know, traditional design, you've got some target parameters, you've got some goal in mind, but really you have to start from scratch. You've got some materials that you're going to build up and try to get to some objective. Well, inverse design starts with the objective and works backwards. So you say, well, I want a material that's got this much strength and this much durability and whatever the material properties are. And then it smartly searches the space of possible materials that could give you those objective properties. So the way that actually I've seen this quite a bit in mathematics recently is we've got all these conjectures, these open problems throughout mathematics. That's what drives development in mathematics, or open questions. And there's a lot of questions where the answer is just an example. The question is, does a thing exist with some properties? And well, you could just have a computer search the whole space of the objects that could possibly have that property, right? Well, often the number of possible objects that you're considering is more than the number of particles in the observable universe. And I'm not exaggerating at all when I say that, by the way. Well, AI gets around this, what's called combinatorial explosion, where just the number of examples you'd have to look at is too large, by focusing in on the interesting areas of that search space. It isolates the possible, the likelier examples, things that could actually work, and focuses on those for the where to put the search. So there's a whole set of different applications of this concept of inverse design that are popping up in different areas. And then also this design, right? So a number of graphic design companies have now integrated AI into their software offerings. The idea is that it can give you, again, a kind of first draft and cut out a lot of that initial grunt work, so that your knowledge worker, your artist can get started right away instead of having a fight with the tools, but have some instead of having a blank slate in front of them, have a something to get started with that has gotten rid of a lot of the grunt work. So just briefly as a kind of schematic of how generative AI works, right? So you step one, you feed it a bunch of content, give it text, images, et cetera. And that's this corpus that it's going to learn from, which is step two.
Take
So
how
you'll
many months? That can take how long? In other words, just give a sense.
Yeah, I mean it's sometimes it's enormous. So the these chatbot engines are trained over many, many months using warehouses full of processors and bespoke connections between the machines and the data center. I mean, it's really of course there are applications where it's not burdensome, but in some cases it's enormous. It's the amount of computing power and time required to train the engines is gigantic. Yeah, so that's really happening in step two. So this is analysis or more specifically training, but it can look like a lot of things. So here you're gonna sort of scan through the data and search for patterns. Right. So this is often a problem, and I'll come back to this in a bit, of representation. So how are you gonna represent the data? Because again, the computer just sees zeros and ones. You have to have some representation that's concordant with how humans view the data. Step three, you're gonna learn from it. So this is where you actually engage the learning process, and the model is then trained up on that all that input data. So here's where you may have heard the term attention. This is one of the big developments that has happened in AI that's made LLMs and related technologies possible. The idea is similar to the search for counterexamples that I mentioned a minute ago. Your AI engine, your model, it's going to focus its attention on the places that matter. Right? This is something that our human brains are very, very good at, and machines are terrible at. The fact that we've made progress on this in the past few years has really enabled machine learning to do some extraordinary things. So the idea is that the AI is going to focus in on the areas that matter most and where you really want to put your attention during the learning process. Next up, okay, now you've trained
Sorry.
your oh sorry
Sorry.
you've trained up your engine, and well, next you have to ask it for examples. So now it's time to run it. So you now that it's learned, you ask it, hey, give me a picture with some parameters and with a style of a type that it's viewed previously, right? So this is where it generates new text and images, and there's often a an iterative refinement process where the AI, I mean, in lots of cases, this is happening implicitly inside a huge neural network, but also you can have an explicit refinement process where the AI is selecting creations that are going to meet the user's requirements or needs as well as possible. Sometimes this is a directly interactive process where you can literally click on the thing and say, "That's I want it to be darker. I want it to say this." And it gives you a new example. And then, okay, it outputs new content. Step six, it spits out an example of what you were looking for, and you can go and run with it.
Now,
Yes, please. So yeah, what why are we talking about this as AtomView? It's it our fundamental development that we've seen recently is this what we call lightweight code word model. So just to go back to LLMs, right? This is a large language model. This is all the ChatGPT, OpenAI, Anthropic, et cetera, all these things that we're seeing. May just change the world really in real time. They have enormous training times, things that are a substantial fraction of a year, and that's with massive data centers and the best engineering there is. Of course, that requires enormous amounts of power consumption. There have been all these stories lately about the kind of power pull that Google data centers are making. It's a gigantic amount of power required to make this happen. They're language based, right? So the fundamentally large language models, it's right in the name, are they're being trained on a corpus of language data. And there's a really slow retraining cycle. So you essentially you train it once, it deploys a model, you go and use it, and then if there's something you don't like, you need to update it, which if you're training data on, let's say, the internet, you need to update it because the world changes. There's a need to retrain, but it's something that's largely manual. So we've introduced a twist on this, this LCM or lightweight code word model. The idea is that one of the fundamental problems that needed to be solved to enable LLMs and all the other related generative AI technologies is that of it's the representation problem. So if you give a neural network a sentence, well, how do you give it a sentence? It just knows numbers, right? A neural network is something that you feed it a bunch of numbers and it spits out a bunch of numbers. It's not something that is able to digest directly human readable information, nor can it generate at the end human readable information. It's spitting out just a long list of numbers. So the idea is that in between the interface that a human is interacting with and the just this this model that's doing a massive computation under the hood, you have to have an embedding. That is, the data has to pass through a kind of distilling process where the semantic content is surfaced for your engine to process. And then that is reversed at the other end, where some representation comes out of the engine and it has to be turned back into something that humans can actually use. That's this embedding problem. Well, we've improved the embedding problem. The idea is that, for example, one of our core technologies, NeuroPac, where we're compacting data, we're ingesting data and it's being cut up into source blocks. These are just chunks of the original data, which are then reduced in size by translating them into code words. What this does effectively, one way to view it, is that you're densifying the incoming stream of data. There's this original stream of data, but now the output, the sequence of code words, is much denser in terms of the amount of information per bit in the stream. That's something that machine learning models love, right? If you can surface the semantic information, make it richer on a per bit basis, then the model will be able to take better advantage of it instead of having to filter out all the noise, all the structure that isn't representing anything that actually corresponds to content, to semantic content. If it's been concentrated and densified, that's something that helps the engine, the machine learning model, to work and to do its job better, more efficiently, and with less investment of time and resources, energy in particular. So we anticipate that when these massive models, transformer models and others, that's really the engine that's under the hood and things like LLMs, when they're married to the kind of embedding that we're getting out of compaction, these sequences of code words instead of the original data, we're anticipating a 15 to 50% improvement in training time, possibly also a reduction in the amount of data needed. That's yet to be seen. On top of that, of course, if you're training on less data and you've got a smaller model that's got fewer nodes, that means that less training time, well, that's less electricity you need to run the thing. So this is improving the energy efficiency profile of all of these learning engines. In addition, while there have been a bunch of sort of hacks used to get large language models to be able to digest and produce, for example, images or videos, every time that's done, it's called multimodal learning. Every time that's done, you have to kind of build a separate engine for each of the kinds of data that's being used, that's being interacted with. That's made a lot easier by LCM because When we're compacting data, all kinds of data is compacted the same way. We're just extracting patterns and then using that to derive an efficient set of code words. It can be images, it can be multimedia data, it can be audio, or it can be text. So the idea is that you could train your engine on code word data that is all kinds of different content without having to do this differently every time. It can be multimodal natively. And then this may also enable models to retrain autonomously or online, we say, in the algorithms world. So the idea is that the model can update itself. When you make the models more efficient, this means that you're able to get closer to autonomous training. Next slide. So yeah, it's we could go on all day about all the promises that have been made, many of which have been delivered on already, about how the world can use generative AI. So everything from financial analysis, drafting legal documents, generating marketing copy, and having customized customer interactions, to producing job ads automatically, and making part of the vetting process for hiring automated. And of course, a big one that's really taken off is the automation of code writing, and really putting these tools into software developers' hands to make their jobs easier and make it so that they're able to use more of their creative process and their technical skills instead of just fighting with code. So they ask, for example, Copilot is a prominent example these days, where software developers ask for some code to solve a problem that they're facing, and it generates a first draft that often works out of the box. And then at that point, it's the software developer's job to improve it, to make it better, to make it safer, to vet what it's doing, and to add features. But it gets them off the ground right away instead of having to start from scratch every time. So to quote the Borg, resistance is futile. We're seeing the world being taken over by these technologies, because it just the range of applications is hard to summarize, even, because there's just so many possibilities, many of which are already being realized in the world. So I'm not going to read off all the labels here, but the point is that there's a ton of data showing that a majority, or maybe even a super majority, of the workload happening in offices everywhere can be improved, can be accelerated, can be automated, can be augmented by generative AI, and specifically LLMs. And then just to sort of give a hint of where things are going, folks working in the AI world, technical end of things, are really thinking about, it's unclear how long-term this is. Maybe you know, we've been surprised over and over by the extraordinary developments coming out of machine learning, but and there's a lot of debate about what would even qualify as AGI, artificial general intelligence, right? The goal is we want all of these different modules that are capable of extraordinary accomplishments that nobody thought computers would be capable of for a long time. But they're very different, right? So we have all these different models that are capable of different sorts of tasks. And then humans that are interacting with them that have their own strengths, right? So we'd like to see a fusion of these different capabilities into some kind of general intelligence, a general cognitive machine that is able to work with us to do a better job in all of our workplaces, and of course advance all of the technologies that at the moment are almost entirely designed by humans, but we really should be collaborating with the AIs, and that's increasingly happening, and hopefully before long we'll see a true merger between human effort and machine effort.
Now I'm taking over, right?
Yes,
so thank you, Josh. I think that was really good, clear explanation of what's going on there. I mean, what is hard to underestimate here, though, is the potential impact. And one of the things that, Josh kind of brushed over there on the AGI thing is that's when humans start to exceed, the intelligence of we mortals, and the speed with which they can increase the IQ of a computer once it hits a point where it's able to do that to itself could be exponential. You could have an IQ in the millions, literally. And so, and draw upon all the information that ever existed that's extant, that is to say, it's still that's available. And also figure out more things. So it's a pretty formidable thing. The predictions for when that could occur, like, anywhere from maybe 5 years from now to 15 or something. But it used to be we never know if we're actually going to do it and so forth. Most computer scientists will tell you that they're pretty much believe that it's coming. Josh, any more comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it, and this is, to come back to the idea of acceleration, right? This is just the availability of these tools is just accelerating everything, including itself. There's a kind of feedback process where AI is improving AI, and yeah, that leads to this exponential growth in our capabilities as humans.
Right. So let's talk about investing in it because, again, this is world-changing stuff. I mean, it's again one of the most significant events in the history of the mankind. I mean, it's really big. And so, getting in it in some way, shape, or form, you almost have to be in it in some way. Like, even if you go to Amazon and you look at the little summary that's on top of the reviews, that's generated by an AI. So, investing in a lot of companies is there are now getting, as Josh was saying, augmented by AI stuff. But the AI manufacturers, in effect, are there's a few categories of those. We're going to talk a little about those. But fundamentally, most of the big AI standalones like OpenAI, Anthropic, the new Elon Musk one, XAI, those are private. And so if you're talking generative AI companies, most of the time that if you're actually investing in one of these giant LLMs that cost billions to do, those are pretty much going to be either big private standalones or they're going to be Google or Microsoft, companies that, hello, you kind of heard of them. So, but they're increasingly getting more AI centric. And AI is what is going to be really their core. In most cases, I think. And also I should mention us, we currently have an active offering of our common stock under Regulation A, that we're an AI company too, and we're a private company. We have some really amazing technology that Josh only brushed on one piece of it, but we have things that are much further along than that, that are pretty exciting and getting serious traction. So let's talk about the categories of what you can invest in. So there's the AI platforms, and we'll talk a little about those, but that's really the ChatGPTs and so forth. And there's the AI infrastructures companies. And then that could even include like companies that build data centers, for example. And then there's the AI application companies, people using AI for something in particular. That is to say, they're not just building a platform that somebody else can use. They're using it for something. So we're going to talk a little about those. So in terms of the companies that are, you know, pure play, you know, yeah, we already talked about those. Those are the platforms. Those, you know, some of them like Hugging Face, that's a specialized kind of thing. What they're doing is they're kind of building a specialized use kind of AI. But most of the time, these platform things, you just can't do anything with them. And as I mentioned a moment ago, most of the time, these big platforms, the place that you have a chance to invest in them is really going to be Microsoft and Google and, you know, and, you know, Amazon, AWS, you know, Facebook, you know, Apple's going to come out with their Apple intelligence, their AI. So all that stuff is, you know, a pretty significant opportunity to invest in something that if you're going out there, like we're going to be an enabler to those kinds of things, most likely in many cases, although we're going to have our own specialized lightweight versions that a lot of DoD is interested in. But for the most part, if you're building one of these giant platforms, you know, it's billions of dollars. As Josh was saying, you know, it's gigantic buildings, it's huge number of processors, it's huge amount of information that's stored and all this. And just to talk about the infrastructure, so those are the companies that are providing the tools that somebody needs to build AI, to use AI. Like the most, you know, prominent, of course, is NVIDIA. They make the chips that most of these guys are using, and they're the most capable chips. And so there's gigantic demand that goes way beyond their capability to fulfill it. Supermicro is actually a pretty interesting company. But Equinix, they have data centers, and they build data centers and rent out space in them, basically opportunities for others to use it. Dell makes servers. We obviously know Google, and they obviously not only they actually make their own chips, and they make they have data centers, et cetera, et cetera. So you're getting the idea here. These are the guys that are providing the picks and shovels to the gold miners, in essence. So. And thinking about the application company. So what are those? Like some of these you may have heard of, but they're, you know, they're using AI to do things like write for you or some specific thing to build software for you. And in particular, you know, particular expertise in it, instead of just using ChatGPT to say, you know, write code for this, you might go to one of these and say, I need this particular kind of software that you have expertise in. So anyway, that's the general categories of it. And to show you an example of how analysts are looking at this, because like NVIDIA is like bonkers, crazy, huge numbers, but JP Morgan and a lot of other pretty savvy big companies that watch this stuff say they don't think this is a bubble. I mean, it may be that individual companies get overvalued. Sure, of course. But the opportunities out there right now to invest in something that is, you know, we're talking 1949 California, right? I mean, if you do it right. Now, a lot of guys went to California and, you know, lost their shirts though. So you got to like do it right. But the gold there is lying on the ground. So it's pretty amazing. So anyway, so talk a little about how this all works. So, you know, what to do, how to go about it really. And it's like, first thing is you got to do your diligence, right? You got to like drill down and figure out like how, you know, how you go about researching these companies. You got to like drill down and say, or, you know, like a lot of it is you just rely on the expertise of your broker, but it's good to understand and have a general idea. I really like the idea of the infrastructure companies, or I really, you know, I'm focused on, you know, like I want to get into platforms, or somebody that has a new technology, like somebody like us that has something that can enable key issues in LLMs and the other kinds of gen AI, the things that that are big problems for them. I have a way of solving a lot of those big problems. You have to like think about it in those categories and say, I need this. I really think that can be a good way. Or you can say, I want to go put money into Microsoft and Google and Facebook and just ride those guys because I think they're on the right track and they have the mass that, you know, they're not going to tank. They're not going to, you know, you're not going to like, you know, get sidelined in some way because, you know, they own the world. And so, and everybody has to bow down to them. So that's really a pretty straightforward way of investing in AI. So, and of course, you know, there's the standard way, ways of making money in AI as you would in any investment, but they're not going to mostly be dividends, right? They're mostly going to be capital gains that you're looking at. And, you know, the good thing about doing it in IRA is you can defer your taxes, and that's anything that you can put off and paying stuff is a good thing. So anyway, and what are the things you can invest in? Well, you know, obviously it's the public companies. It's venture funds that you can get into in some cases through various means. But, you know, some of the top ones, forget it, because they have plenty of people already that want to invest and they put in big chunks. Angel investing is a reasonable thing, but I would be cautious in many cases about it. And, you know, I think focusing on not only how cool the tech is, but how good the management is and how they're experienced and all that. That's, you know, there's a reason why venture guys say they'd rather invest in a company with mediocre tech and great management than the other way around. And it really can make a huge difference. So I would emphasize that point. The other thing is, there are ETFs out there and mutual funds that are focused on AI. And that's a way of diversifying it pretty quickly and pretty well. And again, on the team I already mentioned, but, you know, how good, how defensible is the tech? Now, we have like, I think it's 56 patents now. And, you know, if you're talking about somebody who just is counting on first mover advantage, or, you know, they don't have something that's really defensible, that's, you know, in an area with like technology, you got to be very careful about that. You know, and if you can get projections, many cases, you know, it's not possible. Like we can't do that because of the SEC, you know, is it realistic? You know, because like a standard deal for, you know, most startups is the hockey stick. Market fit, you know, are they really addressing something that's needed? And, you know, is there a big bunch of potential acquirers? Maybe an IPO, but IPOs are right now like dead in the water. So, you know, again, you know, investing directly or investing through AI focused ETFs, mutual funds, and so forth. That's, you know, there's a lot of opportunities out there to get into this. And I would emphasize, it's a really important thing to be in it, even if you want to be on the really conservative end of the pool or the deep end. It's up to you. So with that, I'll turn it back over. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, thanks. That was great. So I'm just going to give a real quick overview of essentially what a self-directed IRA is or how one can invest in non-traditional assets using a self-directed IRA. Self-directed IRA means essentially two things. The account holder has to make all their own investment decisions. So we don't have any advisory services. We don't help you find an investment. We don't do any due diligence on the investment. That's all the responsibility of you as the account holder. The other part of it, go ahead to the next thing, is that you're not limited to just stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. You can invest in almost anything you want inside a retirement account. There's only three things you're not allowed to invest in. That's collectibles, so like art or alcoholic beverages, Beanie Babies, things like that. So collectibles, life insurance, and S corporations, the letter S, right? So you can invest in LLCs, C corps, limited partnerships. The only corporate structure you're not allowed to invest in is S corps. So you can invest in almost anything you want. Our most popular investments are private equity, real estate, and precious metals. We also have people invest in notes. We had somebody invest in cattle, in a racehorse, in a boat, in an airplane. I mean, you can invest in almost anything you want, but it has to be for investment purposes only. It can't be for personal use. So if you buy a piece of real estate inside your IRA, you can't use that as a second home or a vacation home. If you bought the person who bought real or who bought the airplane, it was a business. He leased out the plane, all the payments get paid directly to the IRA. So that is what a self-directed IRA is. You make all the investment decisions, do your own due diligence, and you can hold non-traditional investments. You're not limited to just stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. So in the AI space, what we're talking about here, I mean, obviously, you talked about a lot of the people that are really getting into AI are the big companies, the Googles of the world that you could buy through, through over the exchange. You could go through any brokerage firm, but the smaller companies like Adam Beam, that they're privately held, and so he talked about they're raising capital. They do have an offering, that would be a private transaction. They would provide a subscription agreement. You would invest directly with them. You can do that either personally or you can do that inside the IRA. If you know any other privately held companies who are private or private funds who are looking to raise capital, then you can use your IRA to invest in those private companies or those private funds, right? The key is you have to find those companies or the funds yourself, right? Go ahead, Charles. So essentially, you can use any type of retirement account. So any pre-tax account, like a traditional IRA, a 401k, a SEP IRA, those are what's known as tax deferred, which means that when you make contributions to those accounts, you get to deduct a contribution from your taxable income. It lowers your taxable income for that year, but the earnings grow tax deferred. So that means at some point down the line, when you start taking withdrawals, you have to pay income tax on those, as opposed to Roth IRAs. Go ahead, Charles, which are
Those
post-tax. Actually, sorry, go back one. Those are post-tax. So
are
Roth
typical.
IRAs, you can invest. So when you make the contribution to a Roth IRA, you don't get a tax deduction, but all the earnings grow tax-free as long as two things. You have a Roth IRA for at least 5 years and you're over 59 and a half whenever you take the withdrawal, right? Then it's all completely tax-free. Go ahead. So what do you have to do? Just go ahead through the three. You just open an account with us. It takes maybe 10 minutes. We have an online portal to get an account established. You fund your account. You transfer rollover money from your current custodian to your Entrust account. And then you instruct us to make the investment that you want to make. Now, here's the key. If you're making an investment, your IRA, it's the IRA itself that's making that investment, not you as a person, right? So if I was using my IRA to invest in Atom Beam, Atom Beam would provide the subscription agreement. The name of the investor that would go on that would not be Bill Neville. It would be the Entrust Group for benefit of Bill Neville, IRA number, and then my account number. Right. Or then we shorten the for benefit of to the FBO. So the Entrust Group, FBO, Bill Neville, IRA number, blah, blah, blah. That's the full name of my IRA. That's what goes on the agreement. So the IRA invests, the IRA receives all the income. Same thing if you were to invest in a rental property, for example, the IRA would be on title on that property. The IRA would be on the contract, on all the closing documents and title, which means the rental income would get paid to the Entrust Group, FBO, et cetera, et cetera. If you had any expenses like property tax insurance, the IRA would pay it, right? So when we say purchase your asset, it's instructing your custodian to purchase the asset. And you do that by submitting the investment documents in the name of the IRA.
Quick question, Bill. So mechanistically, there is we're offering our shares on Start Engine, crowdfunding site. How would mechanize how would that work?
Well, I mean, for some at this point, you so crowd, as you said, Start Engine is a crowdfunding portal. So it's a way for you to expose your offering to a group of people that might not be exposed to it, right? But I mean, they don't necessarily have to go through Start Engine, right? Like if somebody that's attending this, or somebody that talks to somebody who's attending this and says, and they reach out to Charles or Josh or your company and says, hey, I heard about you've got this offering. I'm thinking about I might want to do it inside my IRA. And then you talk about, they say, yep, I want to move forward. They just simply have to open an account, and then you don't have to go through Start Engine, right? They can just go, you can provide them your investment document, your subscription agreement directly to them. They turn around and submit it to Entrust and say, okay, Entrust, send my money directly to Atom Beam. And now their IRA, we send the money from the IRA to you, and now the IRA owns that, right? I mean, people are being exposed to your offering through Start Engine. So, if somebody finds you through Start Engine and wants to invest using their IRA, they can do that as well. But they don't, like the people who are attending this, if there's people here that decide they want to invest with you using an IRA, they don't have to go through, unless you prefer. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, they can just directly invest directly with you. They don't
Yeah,
have
so
to transfer them, go through Start Engine.
right. It depends on the size of the investment. Smaller, under 50,000, yes. Then Start Engine is probably the better approach. Although, direct is okay too. But we are going to be offering what's another kind of offering, a Reg D, it's called, and that is directly with a company. But most of the money we've raised. Well, at this point in this offering, we've raised a little under 5 million. And in that offering, I just want to emphasize it's pretty simple to use the Start Engine site, but it's also totally good, as Bill was saying, to if somebody wanted to come to us directly. So, and I
I
mean
mean,
this as a general application.
even if they use Start Engine, ultimately your investment agreement, your subscription agreement, is going to have to be in the name of the IRA and come to Entrust. Like, I mean, ultimately, it's going to end up at that point where a subscription agreement showing the Entrust Group, FBO, et cetera, is the name of the investor is going to have to get forwarded to us. And then the only difference is, I think instead of sending the money directly to you, we send it to Start Engine. Start Engine sends it to you. Right? Like they're basically acting as a go-between. All right. So at this point, go ahead to the next screen. Just a little bit of information. We have monthly webinars. The next one, we're going to talk about doing trust deed investing, which is what's also known as a real estate note. So we're going to have another subject matter expert come in and talk about that. We have a survey at the end, so please answer that. And last thing, follow us on social media, right? So we have all that information. So if you go to the next screen, it's going to bring up our contact info. And at this, actually go one more screen. Yeah, there we go. So there's mine, there's Josh, there's Charles' email, phone numbers. Feel free to reach out. At this point, type in any questions in the Q&A, and there aren't very many yet, so feel free to type in. The very first one on here is actually not a question. It looks like, Charles, it's somebody that you know and just wanted to say that they appreciate you doing this. I want to mention real quickly how we got, just to give people time to answer some questions, actually how we got connected, or I specifically got connected to Atom Beam. A couple of months ago in Santa Clara, there was a big conference around tech, and it had different tracks, these different tech tracks, and one of them was around digital currencies. And digital currencies is an asset class that one could potentially invest in using their IRA. And so we were one of the we paid to have a booth and be a sponsor at it. And I also got 10 minutes to get up and speak about self-directed IRAs. Well, 10 minutes is not a lot of time, but I talked really, really fast, and I did my whole spiel that was just very general. you can invest in alternative assets inside your IRA, including digital currencies. I mean, that was basically the gist of my message. Well, Charles and another person from Madam Beam happened to be in the audience and, kind of grabbed me afterwards and asked me some questions. And they had mentioned that they had an offering and, said, so somebody can invest in us using an IRA with you, and said, yes, they could. And so it continued a conversation. And in the course of having a conversation and finding out what Adam Bean did and, the world of AI, I got the bright idea that this might be something that our audience would be interested in hearing about because, as for the people who are regular attendees, we do these monthly. It's not always easy to come up with a new topic of conversation that we haven't already covered a million times. And because we've been doing this for years and years and years. And so anyway, just a quick background. That's how I got connected with these guys. They happened to be in the audience at a presentation I was doing about self-directed IRAs.
Yeah.
So the
No,
first question, so
tracking down. Right. Sorry, go ahead.
I was glad to. So the first one says, and I think we just kind of answered this, can we invest in Adam Beam directly through Entrust, or does Entrust go through Start Engine to get shares of Adam Beam? Have any Entrust investors bought companies through Start Engine already? So, I mean, we just kind of talked about this. I mean, it kind of sounds like from what Charles said, and he can, if he wants to reiterate this, if you're over 50 grand, basically, you can do it directly through your IRA. If you're under 50, they kind of want you to do it through Start Engine.
Well, I would let me modify that. So we are going to be doing a what's called the Reg D. We haven't finished all the paperwork for that yet. We have an active offering right now, and Kevin McCabe is one of the guys in it actually already. So at any rate, we have a lot of opportunities to just invest straight through that Start Engine offering. However, there is, if you're looking at bigger numbers, 50 plus, then, and you can either contact us and, we can do what's called a private placement, or we will be doing a Reg D, which will be a 50,000 plus sort of investment level, requirement. So, but either way, or any of those three ways. So contact us if or invest through the crowdfunding offering on Start Engine, or just reach it, just wait for the Reg D, which is probably a month out, it'd be my guess, realistically. Everything takes longer because of the SEC, but that's the way it goes. So
For the second part of the question, have any Entrust investors bought companies through Start Engine already? Kevin, I honestly don't know the answer to that. And largely the reason I don't know the answer to that is because, so let's say you wanted
I
to,
know
and you,
one has at least.
okay. Well, what I was going to say was if you came to us and said, hey, I found this company, Adam Beam, through Start Engine, and I want to invest. You're still going to have to open an account with us, fund the account with us, and submit Adam Beam's investment agreement, subscription agreement to us. And ultimately, when you log into your Entrust account, the asset that you see held in the account, it won't say Start Engine. It'll say whatever company you invested in, right? So if somebody came to us and they found a company and it all funneled through Start Engine, from our standpoint, what we're focused on is not Start Engine, but the company itself that you're investing in. That's the subscription agreement we need. That's what's going to show in your account is the asset that you invested in, right? So we've had a lot of people come that have invested in startup companies or privately held funds that they have found through various crowdfunding portal, whether it's CrowdStreet or Start Engine or like Funders Club. There's a whole bunch of different ones. What shows in the account with us is the company, right? So, and Charles said he knows of one. There could be more. Ultimately, I don't know. But from our standpoint, how you find a company that you want to invest in, whether you find that company through their own website or whether you find it through a crowdfunding portal, from a paperwork standpoint, it's ultimately going to be largely the same paperwork that we're going to require and receive. So the next question, which is for you guys, Charles and Joss, what is the minimum investment in your company?
$648. To be precise.
All
So
right, pretty low.
it's
I will say
$8 a
that.
share, and it's just that's why it's a weird, it's not 500 or 600 or something.
Yeah. Now, you're probably not going to want to invest $648 through an Entrust account because we have a minimum annual fee of $199 a year. So if you invested $648 and we were taking basically
Unless you
200
had an
bucks out of
open
that.
account already, right? Yeah, right. But yeah.
Even, yeah. I mean, unless you're already, yeah, and you're just not really adding material yet. I mean, the next question says, what does Entrust charge? So we have our fees on our website, but our standard fees are $50 to open a new account, $95 one-time fee to process an investment into a non-real estate transaction like Atom Beam. And then we have a minimum $199 a year for any invested amount up to 50,000. So that's a flat fee up to 50K. And then an additional 0.15% or 0.0015 for anything over 50. So, for example, if you invested $100,000, your annual fee would be $274 a year. And that's 199 plus 0.15% times 50, which is 50K, which is $75, right? So, in that instance, $100,000, you're looking at a fee of 0.274%, right? So, if you were to get a 10% return, take out our fee, you're getting a basically a 9.75% return. Just to give you some figures. But yeah, like if you're looking to invest $10,000, again, we have a flat 199 a year. So 10 grand, 199, now you're looking at 2% fee, right? So like I said, $648 wouldn't necessarily make any sense.
Right.
Almost all LLMs are biased by the input used to lean politically left and woke. As a contrarian investor, I see the eventual pushback of this path. So are there any companies that are pursuing an awake, less ideological, manipulated base model? That's going to be for Josh, I think.
Sure, yeah. So I don't know any
Sure.
specific examples. But very interesting question. I should say the model is defined by the data that it's trained on, right? So there certainly is a tension to the problem of data being biased in these the corpora that are provided to engines for training. So I don't know of any specific examples, but for sure, people are thinking about how to improve the quality of the output in a variety of ways. Actually, there's a whole related issue, which is that of hallucinations. These networks, you train them on data, and then they sometimes say things that have nothing to do with reality. And so, getting some sort of fact checking built in is a hot research area that addresses it. All right.
So next question, Charles, I think this would be for you. When does this round of financing close?
So officially, so we're it's targeting 20 million. And officially it's supposed to close a year after you start. And we started a month ago, but we already got close to 5 million already. And so yeah, it slows down after you start, but I don't think it's going to be open for a year. I mean, if I had to guess, it's going to be open another two months or something. We also have a bunch of angel investors circling and all this. So, our goal is to get to 20 million one way or another. And we've had a lot of success. This is our fourth crowdfunding round. And so it's a good chance that we're going to be looking at, I mean, it's the fastest raise that they've ever done in on Start Engine, supposedly. I can't verify that, but that was my understanding. And if you look on King's Crowd, it's the top rated in the history of King's Crowd, which rates crowdfunding offerings. It's the top rated company that's ever raised in Reg A. And so there's naturally a lot of attention and so forth. So I don't think it's going to take that long for us to get to our goal.
Okay, that's we don't have any more pending questions. So I want to mention something that this isn't any like promotion for anything in particular, but if anybody out there who is still who are podcast listeners, there is a group of podcasts that falls under the Ringer podcast network, and one of them is Plain English with Derek Thompson, and he's done a few AI podcasts that I've listened to that have been pretty interesting. The first one I think I heard was right after the Chat GPT guy like basically got fired, and then like a week later, I forget his name, and then he was like back with him like a week or two later. But
Altman.
if you guys, what's his name?
Altman.
Yeah,
Sam
exactly.
Altman.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah. But I mean, so if there's anybody who wants to hear some pretty interesting, again, it's Plain English with Derek Thompson. It's part of the podcast network. I just thought I'd mention that. There's been a few of his podcasts I've listened to, and he's done a couple on artificial intelligence that have been pretty interesting. So, all right, guys, that seems like we didn't get a lot of questions. Sometimes they go for quite a while. This was really interesting. I appreciate you guys taking the time to do this. Again, if you guys are for anybody who's attending, if you're still, if you're thinking about wanting to invest with Adam Beam, reach out to them directly at Charles or Josh, their email's there. And if you want to do it, if you're not an existing Entrust account holder and you want to do it in your Entrust IRA, it's pretty straightforward. Just open an account with us. Take that about 10 minutes to do that. Transfer or rollover money from your current custodian to us, which takes maybe a week or two. And then instruct us to invest the money into Atom Beam, and you'll do that by getting their subscription agreement, their investment agreement, and submitting it to us with the dollar amount you want to invest, and we'll send the money directly to Atom Beam, and now your IRA would own that as an investment. And our turnaround time to process the investment is usually about 1 to 3 business days from when we receive it. So you could theoretically have your account established, funded, and invested in less than 2 weeks. So, all right, join us again next month where we'll be talking for Trust Deeds. Charles and Josh, again, appreciate the time. Thank you, everybody who joined. We'll be sending out a link with the replay of this. So, if you want to forward it on to anybody or watch it a second time, it's going to go out to everybody who registered for this, which is we get more people that register than actually attend. So, Josh and Charles, you might hear from some people who didn't attend it live.
Okay, great.
All right, guys. Thanks again. Have a good
Thank
day.
you.
Thanks, and thanks to all our loyal fans who came today. It's we have quite a few that I didn't even advertise this on the site. I didn't realize. Maybe we did, but at any rate, but that is thanks. Appreciate our loyal guys that are part of the team here. So appreciate it.
Excellent.
All
All right,
right,
guys.
take
Have a
care.
good one.
You
Bye.
too.